Hey, At the Letters listeners, before the episode gets going, we wanted to let you know Sportsnet's weekly Blue Jays newsletters are coming soon. Written and produced by my man, Ben Nicholson-Smith, each newsletter will deliver Blue Jays fans with original content you won't find anywhere else other than your inbox, plus all the most important news, analysis, and videos you may have missed but need to see.
So sign up now at sportsnet.ca/newsletters. That's sportsnet.ca/newsletters to have the most in-depth, exclusive Blue Jays coverage delivered directly to your inbox. That is sportsnet.ca/newsletters.
Don't miss out.
The 1-0 pitch is hit back up the middle. Zoik will field. He'll underhand to first, and TJ Zoik has picked up the no-hitter. For the first time in 22 years, the Bisons have a no-hitter as TJ Zoik is mobbed by first base.
And he gets a standing ovation from the fans here in Rochester.
This is At the Letters, brought to you as always by the all-new 2019 Ford Ranger. And we have a no-hitter to talk about, Ben. Not in the big leagues or anything, not where it matters, but TJ Zoik, Triple-A no-hitter.
It's pretty cool.
That works.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And that's, you know, regardless of what happens with his career, you'd have to think that that no-hitter that he got on Monday night would rank as one of the highlights. I mean, to do that against AAA hitters with the ball being juiced at that level too, it's not an easy thing to do.
Sometimes you see no-hitters and it's like, oh, he walked six guys, he had to throw like 150 pitches. Not TJ Zoik. TJ Zoik threw 114 pitches, 73 of them for strikes. He faced only 29 batters. Just a walk and a hit by pitch. Got 15 of his outs via ground ball, 6 via fly ball, including his second to last out on which Jonathan Davis made like this insane play on a flare in shallow center field. And then kind of a cool moment, TJ Zoik gets to make the final out himself. He gets the little comebacker, gets the flip it to first. Probably was like don't screw this up. Pretty cool, man. Pretty cool.
Really cool. Yeah. And great to see Jonathan Davis with that catch that you mentioned, just running straight in, making a great diving play. A nice effort there by Zoik. And, you know, it hasn't been an easy path for him since being drafted in that first round in 2016. He's had some ups and downs, and that includes this year. He's had some lat issues that have sidelined him. And you look at the results going into that start, not to, you know, pick apart the guy's season, but he had a strikeout to walk ratio, 32 strikeouts to 29 walks, which not great. So of all the pitchers in the Blue Jays system, he might not have been the first guy to come to mind as a candidate to throw a no-hitter.
Let him have his moment in the sun. Then why you rip him apart after the night of his life? No, yeah, congratulations to TJ Zoik. And really, like, the Blue Jays needed a bit of a good news story, right? Think about, you know, Blue Jays news over the last couple months, really the entire season. It's been, you know, pretty negative. And for good reason. The team is bad and they're losing a lot. And some franchise icons, really, like, of the last several years have been traded from town. So, I can understand that. But the Blue Jays kind of need a positive story, and this is it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an encouraging sign. And who knows? Like, I think we'll see Zoik in the majors at some point. I don't know when that is, but I think we'd see him at some point.
Do you think it could happen before the end of the season?
The no-hitter doesn't hurt. I'll put it that way. Yeah. I mean,
he's not in the 40, right?
Have to check on that
yeah.
one.
I'll check while you talk.
Yeah, I think that Zoik is someone, when you look at going into that start, he had a 4.42 ERA. He'd made 10 starts. So kind of solid numbers, but definitely not overwhelming. That being said, the Blue Jays promoted Jacob Wagispack when he wasn't doing all that great at AAA. Sean Reed Foley had mixed results at AAA. So it certainly wouldn't be the first time that they had promoted a pitcher who's not exactly dominating at that level. And Zoik is someone who I think is 24 years old right now. It's not like you're trying to necessarily protect him in the way that you would an 18 or 19-year-old kid.
Not on the 40-man roster, but like just thinking about like his age and where he's at, I would think he might be a guy that they have to add over the winter. Like, they've got a few of those guys that they're going to have to add
yes,
this winter.
They will have to add him because he was a 16 draft pick, right? Yeah. Out of college. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, Zoik, and there's a couple others.
Kay.
Yeah.
Hatch, I think.
Hatch as well. Yeah. So, you know, the Blue Jays are going to face like another one of these little 40-man roster crunches like they faced last offseason. Didn't really hurt them because they got Jordan Romano back, who's taken in the rule of five, and now Travis Bergen has actually been DFA'd by the San Francisco Giants. So there's a possibility he'll be coming back as well. Like, that was the one guy that seemed like they had lost. And he was a lefty out of San Francisco's bullpen this year, got hurt a little bit, came back. Kind of an interesting move from by San Francisco, like this close to the end of the year. You would think like maybe you try to keep him until the end just so that you keep the player. But clearly they didn't feel like he was someone that they wanted.
Yeah, almost a different story than the Jays and Elvis Luciano, where they're going to hold on to him. You know that they're going to make sure that he becomes their property at some point, potentially in the next couple weeks.
And then, like, to begin next season, he goes down to, like, what, high A?
Yeah.
Double A?
Yeah, I think high A is the logical spot for him, which is crazy.
Also making noise at the AAA level, Nate Pearson, who is now a Buffalo Bison, is going to make his debut for Buffalo on Tuesday in Rochester. It's been a fast progression for Nate Pearson. When you kind of look at the fact that he missed pretty much all of last season, starts this season in Dunedin, isn't there very long, goes Double A, only 16 outings, and now he's at Triple A. Like, the Blue Jays are, you know, like a lot of fans say, oh, you know, play the kids, bring them up, like push them up, let's get them on aggressive timelines. Like, Nate Pearson's on an aggressive timeline.
Yeah, it's been a quick progression. When you think about how last year he pitched 21 innings, and then this year makes it up to Double A, and he's already been promoted to Triple A with just 83 innings on this season. So we're looking at relatively quick progression, and Pearson has earned it. I mean, I think when you look at the stuff, when you look at the results, there's nothing there that suggests that Double A is the place for him to be challenged the most right now. I think Triple A, when you look at the balls, you look at the home run numbers at Triple A this year, which are spiking to record levels, that could be a new challenge for Pearson, even just for a couple weeks before the Triple A season ends.
Yeah, so if you aren't familiar, in Triple A this year, they're using the big league balls. So that's not only a ball that travels further and seems to fly a lot easier, but that's one with lower seams. So you see a lot of pitchers, like Anthony Kay has talked about this, who have trouble spinning the ball the way they once did and have trouble with their grips and have to kind of relearn how to pitch when they get to the AAA level. So yeah, I mean, this is going to be a test. It helps when, like, your fastball comes out at 104. So, you know, if your curveball loses a bit of bite or your slider isn't quite as sharp, you need to work on that stuff. Like, you can always kind of lean back on that velocity. But yeah, I mean, I think we're going to find some things out about Nate Pearson over these next, you know, he'll probably only get like 3 or 4 outings with Buffalo, like maybe only 2 or 3, depending on how the Blue Jays set it up. It's going to be interesting to see.
It will. And it's a great test for Pearson. I mean, I think he could get outs right now in the major leagues. I mean, when you look this stuff, there's no question, right? Yeah. That he could be getting people out right now. That being said, I have no problem with him going to AAA for a bit and trying to adjust at that level first. I think that when you're looking at you know, a prospect of this kind of ceiling, you want to make sure that he's ready. I think that AAA is the next logical step in that progression. And honestly, I don't think that we'll see him here in September in the big leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see every really good player in the majors as soon as possible. But like, it's like completely understandable that the Blue Jays, like, not only are going to have them have them make a pit stop in AAA like right now, but next April as well. Like, Nate Pearson, I mean, it'll be a big surprise if he breaks camp with this club, just considering service time concerns, considering they don't have to add him to the 40. It makes perfect sense
100%
for the club.
100%.
I hate that rule. Yeah. I think it's terrible. I think it should be adjusted and looked at in the next CBA negotiations. Like, I don't want any rule in place that prevents young players from getting to the big leagues as fast as possible. That when you don't have your best athletes at your highest level of competition, that's a problem. Like, that's not good for fans. That's not good for players. That's not good for anyone except for organizations that get to save a little bit of money, but they're going to have to pay these players eventually anyway. I don't like it, but when the Blue Jays send Nate Pearson to Buffalo at the end of spring training next year, even if he has like a 0 ERA over 20 spring innings, I'm going to understand why they did it.
Of course. Yeah, it really comes down to the incentives that are in place here. And I think it's unfortunate, but the Blue Jays are incentivized to try to get that seventh year of control from Pearson. They are not incentivized to try to win games in the present term. But I think that if the structure was different, and we existed in a universe where, all right, Giants, Orioles, Blue Jays, Royals, whoever wins the most games in September, you get the number one pick in 2020. Nate Pearson will be up because at that point he would help them win games. There's no way that you look at the Toronto Blue Jays pitching staff right now, you can easily find 5-6 pitchers who are not as talented right now as Nate Pearson. But for the reasons of, you know, asset management and trying to get the most out of the pitchers that you have, unfortunately, it makes sense for him to be in AAA.
And there is a timeline where, like, the Blue Jays finish, you know, two games out of a wild card spot or something like that, and they held Nate Pearson down for, like, three starts at the beginning of the season and, you know, started whoever, some mark, and it didn't go well. And there's a timeline where it's, hey, maybe if you brought Nate Pearson north and had this guy pitching out of your rotation from the beginning of the year, you would have qualified for the playoffs.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that's in some ways a painful timeline, in some ways a timeline the Blue Jays would kind of like.
Letters is brought to you, of course, by the all-new 2019 Ford Ranger with available blind spot information system with trailer coverage, which alerts you when a vehicle is detected in the blind spot of your Ranger. But its capability doesn't stop there. To help when you're towing, it will alert you when a vehicle is detected in the blind spot of your trailer as well.
Great.
That is great. Not great. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is hurt. Hurt his knee, making a play at third, cutting in front of Bo Bichette on a ground ball.
Buck, we saw Brandon Drury replacing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at third base last inning. We are told he's out of the ball game because of left knee discomfort and is currently being looked after by the medical staff. So Vladdy Jr. out with left knee discomfort. Buck?
You can see how gingerly he walked down the steps heading toward the clubhouse, and obviously they want to make sure they check that out.
The weird thing with this one is there wasn't like a really acute event. Like, it kind of seems like it's something that maybe like has bothered him before. Like, we know he's had an issue in that knee before, and like, you know, it's not like the sort of thing where like Lourdes Gurriel Jr., when he got hurt, you know, running to first base, it was like, bang, yeah, something happened. Something acute happened there. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., there wasn't like he's on the ground writhing in pain and, you know, there's been some sort of event. Like, he just kind of tweaked something, which kind of suggests, you never really want to, like, you know, speculate with this stuff, but kind of suggests that maybe there was an issue already there that he has aggravated or worsened.
Yeah, interesting school of thought there. I think that one play where he's kind of gliding towards second base seemed to at least aggravate it. But as you said, it's not like he's on the ground writhing in pain afterwards.
No.
He's able to walk off the field totally fine. They get an MRI, and from what we're told, it checked out. So at this point, the assumption is that Vlad Jr. will be back in a couple of days. But it does also raise, I think, bigger picture questions about Vlad Jr.'s. I've answered questions about, should he be moved to first base, or is he in good enough shape? These are the, you know, we do a lot of radio, a lot of talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, and these are the questions that come up in and around the team.
That's the other thing. He went for an MRI.
Yeah.
Like, if it's like no big deal, you're not going for an MRI.
Right.
You know,
if you stand up from this chair and you feel a bit stiff, we're not sending you through the MRI machine.
Right. So, you know, like, clearly there is something going on. It's like when I saw Buster Olney tweet about this yesterday. He's so right. When teams like describe that an athlete is like, oh, he's got inflammation. It's like, all right, well, you're not really telling us anything. Like, you're not really telling, like, you're not actually telling us what's going on. Like, you're hiding what's going on. Like, inflammation, like, you and I have inflammation right now. Every player in MLB is dealing with inflammation. If you eat too many tomatoes, you get inflammation. Like, it's an inflammatory food. So, like, that doesn't really tell us anything. So this flatty knee thing is like, it's suspect.
And we've seen the Blue Jays at various points in the last couple of years, be less than forthcoming with this stuff. To some extent, that's the nature of the business, right? When Ryan Borucki goes down and says he thinks he's going to miss one start, I believe it. They thought he was going to miss one start, but it ends up being basically season ending. Josh Donaldson, they thought it was basically a non-issue. becomes an issue and misses 4 or 5 months. Ken Giles, same thing.
Yeah.
So there are lots of instances where the Blue Jays initially downplay the severity of injuries that are later revealed to be more significant. And so that's just the reality of the business. I do not think that this is limited to the Blue Jays. I think if you were to look closely at the Red Sox, the Arizona Diamondbacks, or the Padres, you'd see the same traits. To some extent, it's just Major League Baseball. But that doesn't mean that we have to take the Blue Jays at their word when they say it's day to day. We just don't know.
No, there's probably like a future when we're like sitting in here in like, you know, 2026 and we're talking about lower body injuries.
Oh, you know? Yeah. It's like, almost likely, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it does re-raise like a topic that is like, you know, been, and you kind of mentioned it before, been around Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which is body composition and which is conditioning. And we know it's something that the Blue Jays have been concerned about in the past. When they say routines, I mean, that's part of it. Part of routines is how do you prepare for games and how much video do you watch and what are you doing in the batting cages and is your work purposeful or is it just eyewash? And part of that is what are you eating and what's your rehab like and how are you preparing your body for the rigors of a major league schedule? Is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s conditioning and body composition optimal right now? No, clearly not. Like, we can all see that. And I think that while he's young, he's going to be able to bounce back well from, you know, injuries like this. Like, yeah, he's 20 years old, man. Like, so he's going to be able to respond well to this type of feedback, which is kind of suggesting that maybe you're carrying too much weight around or like, you know, maybe you aren't, you know, stretching enough or, you know, foam rolling enough or whatever. But I think the you know, you want Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be as good of a player as possible into like 32 and into 36. Like, you want him to get through and have a long career, like a Hall of Fame career. That's where I think some of the conditioning and body composition issues are going to come back to bite him.
Right. At this point, that's a part of the equation, because we're not just worried about, oh, are the Toronto Blue Jays this year going to win, you know, 67 or 69 games? Really, that question is secondary. And even the question about Vlad Jr.'s season and is he going to win Rookie of the Year? Ultimately, that's secondary too, because the goals for this team in the medium and long term are much bigger. And so they want Vlad to be in the best shape possible. I mean, I've said it before. I think that going into this offseason, the Blue Jays will present Vlad with a plan that they want for him to follow. I think that plan would likely involve him spending a lot of time around their Dunedin facility and getting into absolutely the best shape that he possibly can. That's, I mean, if we were writing about a hockey team or a football team or a basketball team, that would obviously be the expectation around a 20-year-old star player, right? Like, we saw, you know, if Connor McDavid was in less than ideal shape, I think the Edmonton Oilers would be like, all right, man, like, we're going to try to work with you on this and try to really, really make you into the best possible peak athlete that you can be. So I think that will definitely be part of the conversation this winter.
And ultimately, it'll come down to Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s buy-in, right? And how invested he is on it. Like, you and I can say, like, oh, I want to get in better shape. But unless you're actually going to do it, like, unless you're actually going to commit to it and want to do it, like, that's what it takes. Because, like, you know, the Blue Jays could say, all right, you know, stick around Dunedin and, you know, we'll work you out every day or whatever. But they aren't going to, like, have hands on him 24 hours a day.
No.
Right? So it's going to come down to him wanting to do it. And when he's, you know, got, like, an 800 OPS or whatever it is through his first however many games, and he's saying, I don't know, things going pretty well for me. Like, I'm on the cover of magazines. You know, I'm doing hitting tutorials on MLB Network, and I'm crushing baseballs. I'm in the Rookie of the Year, you know, consideration. Like, what do I need to change anything for?
Right. And he's also only 20 years old. I don't know this for a fact, but you might wonder, maybe he would want to go home and be around his Hall of Fame father, his grandmother.
He's also not from this country,
right?
So he grew up in the Dominican.
You and I have spent time in Dunedin, Florida. It's not necessarily the spot that I would want to spend 12 months a year or spend my entire offseason. I might rather be at home around my friends and family. And that being said, I love Dunedin at times, but it might wear on you if you were there just month after month.
Totally.
It's not for everyone. So I think that will be a conversation is the point, but I don't think it's time. And I wonder what you think on this. I suspect that we might agree, but I don't think it's time to talk about moving positions for Vlad.
No, I think that would actually hurt the work ethic side of it, right? Because, like, right now, to, like, get ready to play third base every day, like, you gotta do a bunch of work, right? Like, you gotta be taking those ground balls hit from John Schneider every day, and you gotta be, like, stretching out and, like, doing your pregame routine and all that. If you take that away from him, like that would actually, I think, hurt his routines and his preparation.
Yeah.
As ironic as it may be, right? And I also don't believe that like going to first base is really going to put that much less stress on his body. Like with the amount of shifting in today's game, like first basemen are covering way more like ground than they ever had to. Like they're being pulled further away from the bag in some of these aggressive shifts, and they got to race to get back there on a ground ball. You get a lot of, think about how often you see a little flare into right field foul territory, and a first baseman's got to go sprinting after it because like the right fielder is shifted way over towards right center. So like, I think he'll be moving around just as much, and I think he'll be having just as much, you know, tax and toll on his knees and his ligaments and his joints and everything playing at first base as he would at third. So really the only way to limit that would be to make him a designated hitter. You don't want a 21-year-old designated hitter. So I think like leaving him at third base for now, like, is what's best for him and improving his routines and his conditioning. At some point, the Blue Jays are going to need a third baseman like who can make the damn plays, right? But this point is not that point, because as you said, the difference between 67 and 69 wins isn't big. And next year, we're probably going to be talking about the difference between 80 and 83 wins, optimistically.
Right. Yeah, I think too, it's not like Vladdy has zero tools. I mean, he's got a good throwing arm.
He's got a great arm, man.
Pretty good hands. So you've got some stuff to work with there. You know, so far he's not making those Josh Donaldson catches down the left field line on pop-ups. His lateral range probably isn't going to rival Nolan Arenado or the best Matt Chapman, the best third baseman in baseball. But if he can become an average third baseman, that's a huge win for the Blue Jays. And it's not that hard to imagine. I mean, I can also imagine him at first base in 2 years, but I can also imagine him being actually a pretty solid third baseman. So why give up on that now?
I think his future is as a first baseman. I just don't think it should be right now.
Yeah.
And even think about like mentally, right? Like you've kind of brought this guy up. Like he's playing third, like because he wanted to play third.
Yeah.
Like he was like came up as a corner outfielder and was scouted by a lot of teams as a corner outfielder. And then like when Alex Anthopoulos and Tony LaCava went, you know, and Andrew Tanish went down to see him, they're like, hey, where do you want to play? And he said, actually, I kind of want to play third. So Blue Jays made him a third baseman. And they challenged him with it every step of the way, and they've kept him there, and they've given him ways to get better. And so mentally for him, like if you take that away and you say, not going to happen, sorry, we just don't believe in you, we don't believe you can do this, you would think there would be a bit of a confidence hit there. And you'd think that would, you know, that could, and who's to say, right? You can't quantify this stuff, but that could affect his performance if he's thinking, oh man, like I failed, I didn't do this.
Yeah, I mean, the day he came up, he said his favorite player was Adrian Beltre. You want him thinking like that. Adrian Beltre, an amazing two-way player, Hall of Famer, incredible defender at third base who also hit. That's what you want Vladdy thinking. I mean, if he's trying to emulate a player like that, you're in great shape. Someone who has fun, someone who hits, someone who fields, that's the target. You don't want him, you know, saying that his favorite player is Luke Voit. You know, you'd rather have him, not that he would say that.
But I really want to be Daniel Vogelbach.
Right, that's a better example. Daniel Vogelbach. You want someone who does it all. That's what you want Vladdy emulating.
Tired of subscribing to multiple streaming services to get your sports fix? Introducing Sportsnet Now. Live stream the entire MLB postseason and entire World Series, over 500 NHL games, Raptors and NBA, and much more, all in one subscription. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones and tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, PlayStation, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. Get the best bang for your buck with the sports streaming subscription that gets you the most content. Visit snnow.ca for more details.
Openers, baby. It's all the rage for the Toronto Blue Jays. They've already used it, like, you know, probably off the top of your head. 12 times, and I bet you they're going to use it a whole bunch more from here on out because, A, they don't have really a rotation. And B, it's been working for them. They've been like having success with it. Are they not 10-2 with it?
9-3.
9-3.
Pretty good results. So yeah, I mean, I think so. They've used it 12 times already. They've got maybe 40 games left. 35. They have 35 games remaining as we record this. I bet they use it 20 more times. Like, wow. I think in most of their games, they're going to use an opener from here on.
So that's Wilmer Font. That's Neil Ramirez. Who else?
Derek Law could be in that mix. Buddy Beauchers could be in that mix.
Wow.
I mean, I think anyone. Honestly, yeah. I think this whole staff has been reimagined. Stroman and Sanchez gone. It's just whoever can get out. That's what you're looking at.
How sustainable is that year to year? I feel like I've thrown this at you before. Like, how is it like? Because I just don't think that you can do that year over year over year.
You don't want to.
I think it makes sense right now. But yeah. I don't like think that the, you know, and I think the Blue Jays will do it a handful next year, maybe. But by like 2021, you need some starting pitchers.
100%. I mean, even the Rays have kind of graduated out of this where Torinos and Yarbrough are pitching so well as the bulk guys that they've just been using them as traditional starting pitchers. And you have Glasnow and you have Morton and you have Snell. And all of a sudden you're looking at a complete staff that doesn't necessarily need openers in the same way. So that's where the Jays would want to get. In the meantime, they're just not close. Like, their pitching is way worse than the Rays. So I think you have to mix and match and see what you can do.
So I think that, you know, if you look at the best teams in baseball, I mean, yeah, the Rays have done it, right? But, like, look at this LA Dodgers club that the Blue Jays are playing right now. They're not throwing openers at you. Like, they're throwing Kershaw and Ryu, right? And Kenta Maeda, you know, like Walker Buehler, right? Like, look at those, you know, the Cleveland teams that have, you know, they're about to reach postseason for like the fourth year in a row, like Kluber, Carrasco, like Bieber, like really good pitchers. Like, you need starting pitchers, I think, to be a good team eventually. Like, I just don't think that we're going to see like a perennial contender regularly using openers.
I don't think you can build your staff around it.
Yeah.
Maybe at the back, you have a couple guys that you mix and match.
Maybe once. Once a turn is what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
once a turn.
Well, yeah, once a turn.
That's reasonable.
I could see that. The Blue Jays are doing it like three times a turn.
Yeah. Here's an unrelated question for, or I guess a related question for you. Why wouldn't the Astros, for example, use an opener too? Because I know that was like, that was always.
They have like Verlander Cole and Zach Greinke.
But like, why wouldn't it help them too? Because if it helps Sean Reed Foley, wouldn't it help Justin Verlander too?
Because Justin Verlander is like really, really good as a starting pitcher. Like, why are you going to change what Justin Verlander is doing?
So you're saying it's a routines question.
There are like guys like, you know, Jacob Wagesback and Sean Reed Foley who don't have Verlander stuff.
Oh,
and,
not even close.
And don't have like Verlander ability. Like, you want to perhaps like not have them face the first inning when you are facing top of the order. And when, like, I think statistically the majority of runs are scored. You want to start them against the bottom of the order. And when they turn it over a third time, have them turn it over with 6-7-8.
I guess put it this way. If you're in a playoff game, if you're the Astros, would you think about starting, say, Ryan Pressly for the first? So then that takes care of the beginning of the order, whoever you're facing, the Yankees, for example. Then you have Verlander come in for the seventh through the, or for the second inning through the eighth inning. And then you have Asuna close it out.
No, I'm just going to let Justin Verlander pitch the first through the sixth or whatever, and they're going to go to my bullpen.
Right. I guess I would be tempted to save Verlander that very first inning and then ease things a little bit from there.
If I was starting a playoff game with, like, TJ Zoik, right? Yeah, okay. Right. Sure, I would think about it. When you don't mess with, like, a Zach Greinke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the way we've seen these teams behave. So it seems like you've got... lots of people agreeing with you there.
The reason the Blue Jays are doing this is because their starting pitchers right now are underwhelming. Sean Reed Foley, Trent Thornton, Jacob Wagesback, and Thomas Pinone. Like, that's your quote-unquote rotation right now. Let's say if two of those guys were to be in the opening day rotation in 2020, which two do you think it would be?
I think Thornton, because he's the one guy right now who doesn't have an opener attached to him. Right. So I think he would be the most likely. And I think beyond that, Wagesback has shown the Jays something. I mean, it's not a ton, but when you look at the results for Wagesback, he's been pretty consistent, 4.20 ERA through his first 45 innings. And I think if he could come close to replicating that, the Jays would have to be really happy.
I think that's interesting. I think those are probably the two guys I would pick as well, because I think Sean Reed Foley's future is as a reliever.
Yeah.
Personally, like a guy who's gonna whose fastball will play up or like play back to what it once was, and who can, you know, maybe just go max effort on his slider and get some of that swing and miss and some of that chase that he hasn't been able to get this year, and forget about changeups and just go fastball slider one inning out of the bullpen and forget about having to try to like approach a lineup a different way the second time and potentially even a third time, although we haven't often seen him get that far into games lately. So, Thomas Pannone, I kind of see as a long relief lefty at some point. He's had troubles with home run ball lately, had troubles with velocity lately. You never want to write a guy off. Like, you know, he could become Wade Miley. You never know. But if I had to say the two most likely guys to work out as starters in 2020, I do think as well it's Thornton Wagesbeck.
Yeah, not to pick on Pannone, but you just look at the way he's kind of faded as the season has gone on and even inning to inning. I mean, you look at how he does first time through versus second time through the order. It's a definite drop off in production. That's not what you want to see from a starting pitcher. So that does profile more as a reliever. I think Reed Foley is interesting because he has the potential, right? Like you see, he has thrown 94, 95. You know what's in there. He's got a breaking ball that does have some nice break on it at times. You've got also a guy who threw strikes in his last outing almost to a fault, where the Blue Jays now want him to expand more, throw the fastballs way up, throw the sliders in the dirt, try to get more swing and miss that way. But he has shown that he can throw strikes. So there's, you can kind of see the top prospect pedigree showing itself, and you're intrigued as to what he might look like as a starter. But I think now you're likely looking at Thornton and Wagesbeck.
So do that for me in the eighth inning. Come out right. And throw strikes and have a 95 mile an hour fastball and a nasty slider and get me three high leverage outs.
Right. And it might come to that. I mean, I think he'll arrive in spring training next year as a starting pitcher.
Yeah.
And the opportunity will be there for these guys, because even if they add, I mean, I think it's a virtual certainty that they'll add at least one free agent starting pitcher.
They should add two.
They should add two. So let's say they add two. You know, you have Shoemaker coming back. You have maybe Baruchy. Like, there's still going to be opportunity in this rotation.
We have quickly forgotten about Ryan Baruchy, who, like, could show up to spring training healthy, and he could look like the 2018 guy again. And then he's in your rotation. Then you're looking at, like, one guy out of these four. Maybe TJ Zoik leapfrogs, right? Like,
sure.
You know, through a no-hitter.
Yep.
Maybe he leapfrogs them in spring training, right? Like, maybe Julian Merriweather shows up and is, like, throwing 98, 99, and the Blue Jays are like, yep, no, you're in. Like, there you go. Like, all four of the guys now could start next season in AAA.
Right. I mean, and that would almost be great for the Jays. Like, if they have these guys in AAA to start the season, that would be a sign that others have stepped up and pass them on the depth chart. I don't think that the Jays are in a position right now where they want to guarantee anything to these guys. I mean, yeah. We even saw with Baruchy this year, he had that great start, 3.87 ERA through his first, whatever it was, 15 outings. And he arrived in spring training having to earn a job.
Yeah.
So you can guarantee that these guys are going to arrive with no job certainty because they just haven't earned it. I mean, they've shown flashes, but no one here has pitched so well that you say, well, that's it. He's a fixture. He's earned it for the foreseeable future.
Anthony Kay is going to be like almost 25
right.
Next year. Like next year's his age 25 season, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's a guy that like could totally win a rotation spot out of spring training.
The competition's going to be wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is wide open because outside of Nate Pearson, there's no one who you're like, that's the guy, right?
No.
There's no one who you're like, that's a front of the rotation arm, right? Because for, you know, having 20 pitchers and, you know, that we want good stories out of them, this and that and the other, you still need guys who have velocity and like really good off-speed weapons. And of the four right now who are in the Blue Jays quote-unquote rotation, you don't see anyone in there who has premium stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's looking right now. Even Reed Foley's stuff is playing down.
Yeah.
Pannone's stuff is playing down. I mean, this is, maybe it's a product of a long season. These guys are going through it, you know, for trying to prove that they can. But you see their velocity diminishing. And that's not the direction you want to see things trending.
Like, if Jacob Weigelsback is going to have success at the big league level as a starter, like, he's going to cut it, he's going to sink it, he's going to run it, you know, he's going to mix and match with his pitches, and he's probably going to, like, five and dive, right? Like,
yeah.
You're not going to see, like, we were just talking about Verlander, right? Like, that's, like, an ace, man. Like, that's overpowering stuff that's I can, like, shove through seven, eight, sometimes nine innings, right? Like, a lot of, you know, Trent Thornton, right? Like, has got, you know, nice fastball, like, good breaking stuff, good spin rates. But again, a guy who you're like, yeah, five and dive, great.
Yeah.
Happy. Like, none of these guys have that kind of premium elite stuff. And you have to wonder if you're going to be able to build a competitive rotation based on guys who lack that ability, or if you're going to need someone other than just Nate Pearson to show up with, like, really, really wicked repertoire.
Well, when you think about the teams that have the worst starting rotations and succeed in spite of those, they have really good bullpens, right? So, like, you've got Oakland, which, you know, seems every year that they're just piecing it together with Mike Fiers and Brett Anderson and Marco Estrada. You know, you've got, like, objectively pretty mediocre rotation at best, but their bullpen is just stacked. I mean, you have all kinds of relievers who are pretty dominant. They're pretty aggressive in free agency. They trade for relievers. Even a guy like Liam Hendricks has just become so nasty over the course of the last 4 years since the Jays traded him for Jesse Chavez after 2015. He is like a relief stud now for that team. So I think that's the only way that you can have a mediocre rotation and contend is if your bullpen is just lights out.
The other thing I don't like about openers, and I meant to say this earlier and I forgot, it means guys are going to get paid less in arbitration. That's another thing that I really don't like about it. And, like, I understand, like, Tampa Bay, like, they're trying to manage costs that, like, you expect it from a club like Tampa Bay. A club like Toronto, like, should be paying players.
No doubt. And you want to see these players get paid. You know, it's interesting. Like, I think that if you really excel in that role as, say, the opener or the bulk guy, I still think that you would get paid pretty well. Because
it's going to change the game, right? Because once, like, actual legit openers, like some of the guys who, like, have, like, a ton of starts but they don't have the innings bulk, get to arbitration, how are arbitrators going to look at that?
Oh, it's going to be a new precedent that will be set.
Similarly, with the bulk guys who come in behind, they'll get to arbitration without a bunch of starts but with a lot of innings. What are arbitrators going to think about that?
I think you'd have to compare it mostly based on the innings total.
Yeah.
So even if they don't have the starts, I think you'd look at the innings and say functionally they were used as a starter. And I think that their pay would be pretty close to that of a starting pitcher.
I think arbitration needs to change, like, in general. Like,
100%.
I think that's the system is, like, archaic. And I think that a lot, you know, some of the, like, mysterious individuals who, like, make these rulings maybe aren't as up to date with the contemporary way that the game's played or analyzed.
No, on a Monday morning, they're arbitrating a dispute between an airline and a flight attendant. And then on Tuesday, they're doing arbitration for Giancarlo Stanton and the Yankees. Like, there's no expertise in here for these arbitrators. None.
Yeah. And so I think it needs to be changed, overhauled completely anyway, but in the event that it's not, and it likely won't be, I am concerned about how the opener is going to impact earning potential for young athletes in the game. I might be being a little too, like, skeptical, but I am concerned.
Someone's got to watch out for the Wilmer Fonts of the world. I'm glad that Arden Zwelling is on it.
I'm more concerned about, like, Trent Thorne's one guy. I'm more concerned about the Thomas Pinones of the world.
Right.
Right? Like, Wilmer Font should be fine.
Yeah, well, Thomas Pinone's got to get to arbitration first.
That's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. You can get us at sportsnet.ca/podcast. And you can read us at sportsnet.ca. All that good stuff. Thanks to Sho Ali for producing this week. Thanks to Drew Livingstone for working the cameras. Thanks to you for listening. Talk to you next week on At The Letters.